Okay, thank you very much. We'll get going with the next speaker, who is Karmat Sarin from the Australian National University, and he will be speaking on kinship and language documentation in Bhutan.
Thank you. Okay, so my talk would be on kinship from Bhutan. Sorry, the computer doesn't fit here really well. So, yeah, my name is Karmat Sarin, and I'm a master's student at the Australian National University. And of course, my talk is on kinship from Dzongkha language in Bhutan. And in outline, I will give an introduction on brief introduction on Bhutan, and also the languages that are spoken in Bhutan. And that would follow with a brief description of the language that I will be using for this talk, which is my native language. And I'll show you some kinship charts comparing kinship words in not only in Dzongkha language, but also Turkey, which is considered to be sister language of Dzongkha. And I've also thrown some data comparison on other language that is known as Lop, which is for comparison. And then I'll conclude on what I think is a conclusion of looking at data. So, Bhutan, of course, a lot of you would know where Bhutan is and what languages are spoken there and all that, but if few people don't know where Bhutan is, I would like to talk a little bit, give a little background where it is and all that. So, where is Bhutan? If that's your question, then it's in the Northern Hemisphere, of course. And as I circled in the globe, that it's in the South Asia continent, and it's sandwiched between two giant countries. In the north is China, of course, and in the south is India. And to be precise, it's in the Himalayas, to the north, straight to the north is Tibetan capital Lhasa, and to the south is northeastern, northeast India, which is again north of Bangladesh, and if we keep going down south, then we will hit the Bay of Bengal. And that's why we have a lexical item in our word list called Jamso, which means ocean, but in Bhutan we don't have oceans, so we give examples of big lakes. When we have a half kilometer long lake, then we think that's Jamso, but I have seen big Jamso now. So just to give you a little idea of how Bhutan looks by landscape, and this is a picture that I've taken from a pass looking towards north. So the mountains that you see far in the distance are borderline to Tibet, and those mountains are actually between 6,500 to 7,000 meters high, and which makes a very good fence in the north. So they are kind of difficult to cross over, so that keeps the border secure up in the north. And the valleys, most of the valleys are running down to the south. And in Bhutanese head, when you talk about landmarks, north is up and south is down, which means all the valleys are running down south, and almost all the valleys run rivers going south. So when we head down the river, then we will run into India. And if we keep going up north, we will head to Tibet. So that's a little representation of landscape in Bhutan, how it looks. Now, the size of the country is about 37,000 square kilometers, bird fly from north to south and east to west. It's the size of Switzerland, to just give you an idea of size of the country. And the population is quite dense. It's about over 600,000 people. So it's not even a population of a small city in the Western countries. The country is about 70%, at least 70% forested. So there's a rich biodiversity and a lot of ethnobotany to do, and a lot of bird watching sites, and a lot of rare species, mammals, and all that. So it's a good future research site for especially people doing ethnobotany. And there's also a lot of culture, history, and a lot of languages, so which I will mention a few in my slides later. And up in the north, this is one of the mountains known as Jomolhari, a mountain dedicated to goddess Jomo, which in the Himalayas most nomads think that that's their main god of the mountains. So this is Jomolhari, Mount Jomolhari at the base. And although most population live down in the south, in the southern valleys, people do live up at this altitude, and this would be around 4,000 meters high from the sea level. And these people are nomad, and they are known as Jobs in Bhutan, and Jobs raise up yaks. And up highland fields are good for pasture land, and that's why they raise up yaks. And they also raise up mules and horses to haul their supplies from down in the valley. And they make a good trade with people from the south, selling their yak products, such as butter. Yak butter fetches really good money. And they also sell yak hair woven fabrics, which make good blankets and good warm clothes for southerners in the winter time when the weather is pretty harsh. So nomads, nowadays the time is changing, and time is going in favor of nomads, because in the past nomads didn't have that much of financial strength. But now, famous kind of good selling medicine, you might know that cordyceps fungus grows from a caterpillar, and that makes a good market in the Chinese medicine, I believe. And it is a kind of remedy that cures a lot of problems that human beings have. And that grows up in the highland, and the royal government of Bhutan allowed nomads to harvest that and sell it. So that is making really good business for them. And they are kind of getting ahead of the lowlanders. So lowlanders dealing with modern development, and then economic crashes and job problems and all that. But nomads are not dealing with such problems these days. So they are doing good. And these are the lowland valleys that looks like in Bhutan. That you see paddy fields growing rice, but most of them are now sadly turning into cities, and that creates pressure on people not having enough food, but you have to find jobs and all that. So that's why it's becoming difficult for lowlanders, which I call lowlanders because they live down in the low valleys. And they used to make good trade with yak herders, getting yak cheese and yak butter and yak blankets. But now, since they are losing their farmlands, they are not making that good of a business with yak herders. So here's a representation of yak herders. The nomad lady wearing her fabric woven from yak hair, and that's very good to keep warm inside and to keep the cold out. And she has the traditional hat that keeps the rain away again. And the lowlanders on the right shows the lowland valleys are quite warm, so sometimes it's too hot to wear shoes and all that, so you see kids not wearing shoes and all that. So that represents the country, that it can be as cold as freezing, and it can be as warm as sweaty. And languages spoken in Bhutan, there are a lot of languages, and some of the languages that belong to Tibeto-Burman languages, I have given list here from Professor George Van Dream's list, and Professor George did the first language and linguistic survey of Bhutan in around 2000, somewhere in the early 2000, but this one is a little bit earlier, and I got the opportunity to assist him to do some of the linguistic work at that time. And the colors represent two languages belonging to different groups of Tibeto-Burman branch. And since I have less time to talk about kinship, and I should speed up. So these are the languages that are spoken in Bhutan, but the Dzongkha language is precisely spoken in this darker green circle. By about 8 districts. But Dzongkha, since Dzongkha is a national language, it's supposed to be spoken by pretty much all the other language speakers all over the country. And that's why the lighter greener circle is given, so that at least everybody tries to understand Dzongkha. So therefore, pretty much all Dzongkha, all Bhutanese are able to speak and understand Dzongkha. Well, Dzongkha also has varieties of dialects, and the Dzongkha version that is spoken up in the north by Layups and Lunups are quite different than how it is spoken down in the valleys by people like Chukha and Sha region. And among Dzongkha speakers, the language spoken by Wang Valley and Pinup Valley are supposed to be the main kind of where they give examples of, oh, Wang people speak the best Dzongkha, or the Pinup speak the best Dzongkha. And the language spoken in Ha region is quite similar to the Danjup language that is spoken in our neighboring state of Sikkim, because they are quite close. So they also consider that they are dialect of Dzongkha. So these are the varieties of Dzongkha dialect. Now, although some linguists consider Dzongkha is a dialect of Tibetan, the distinction between Chukchi and Dzongkha is quite greater than we think. Of course, because phonology, or the sound system of the languages, Chukchi and Dzongkha, are quite different. And there is no systematic one-to-one correspondences, because Chökyé and Dzongkha kind of sound quite different. Dzongkha has, because Dzongkha has more sounds than Chökyé. Dzongkha has devoiced, Dzongkha has retroflex stops, and Dzongkha also has more vowels than Tibetan. Dzongkha has nasalization, and Dzongkha also has vowel length. Now Dzongkha also has tones, so high, low, level, and falling contours, whereas Tibetans don't. So therefore, Tibetan and Dzongkha are not mutually intelligible. So this is a point I wanted to make since I was studying Chökyé, that I realized these differences, and now I'm realizing it more and more. So now for kinship, the data that I collected for this talk is from mostly from my own, as I'm a Dzongkha speaker myself, but the other data that I compare here are collected from some of my friends coming from different Dzongkha speaking area. And I give some Tibetan data as well for comparison, as I have studied a little bit of classical Tibetan myself. And recently I also did a kinship term comparison in Hop region in the south, a language that is considered quite endangered, and I have thrown some data there as well for comparison. So here comes the kinship charts that I give you, but I'm not going to go into details. And you can see clearly the cognates of terms there. But do note that age and ange, the terms age and ange, are applied for both grandparents and as well as great-grandparents, so that the terms share there. And the term aku and aja for two kinds of uncles is different. So paternal uncle is aku and maternal uncle is aja. And also paternal aunt is amchu and maternal aunt is ani. So they have different terms for that. Now here, the term for father and mother in the previous slide also is used for spouse's parents, like husband's father and husband's mother, wife's father and wife's mother. And the term paternal uncle, aku, can be shared later in, please note that for two last lines that are husbands of aunts. So that term is shared by father's brothers as well as husbands of aunts. Now here, the term on the last line, maro, that is one term that is one of my main points to put this talk, and I'll get back to that in a minute later. And here, the term that gives us importance to look at is the sim and num. So not all the sisters call sim, or not all the sisters call num. So sim is applied by elder brothers to younger sisters, whereas num is applied by elder sisters to younger sisters. So that's a different term that is unique to Dzongkha. And map and amtsu has a shared meaning a little bit. Map can mean son-in-law as well as husband, whereas num can only mean daughter-in-law, and amtsu only means wife. So this one doesn't have that much to talk about. It's quite simple and easy to understand. And tsu and tsam, tsuju and tsamju are two different terms for grand kids and great grandkids. But I do want to get back to this one, Maro system, Maro relationship. And Dzogchen has a rich system of kinship that is similar to Tibetan, but different in interesting ways. And similarities are most forms are cognate, as you have seen in my previous slide. And also, categories are shared between Dzogchen and Tibetan. But there is a difference. So for example, Tibetan doesn't have a Maro relationship, whereas Dzogchen has. And the difference raises a good question out here. And I think the answer is that Tibetans are patrilineal and patrilocal, whereas Dzogchen speakers are matrilineal and matrilocal. And I think the explanation is that because sisters don't move out usually in Bhutan, and husbands move in. So when husbands move in, and when they are husbands of sisters, then they have to work together, they have to live together, and they are kind of every day helping each other, and therefore working hand to hand or shoulder to shoulder. And that is a term developed for Dzogchen. So I think that's the answer. And here's my conclusion. And Dzogchen has more than Dzogchen is just more than a dialect of Tibetan, as some linguists have described in the past. Because I think Dzogchen itself is a language by itself, and as I have explained earlier, that it has its own phonological system and it has its own way of describing. And documenting in the field of language documentation, I think sorting out kinship is a opening door to a whole world of relationship in language and linguistic work. With this, it opens up a whole lot of relationship in a society like Bhutan, where everything pretty much relies on relationship, and sorting out this kinship term is a important, one of the important language documentation subject. And with this, I would like to thank everyone for listening.
Slide 15, because you had this interesting example of the aunt terms being swapped over between Sha and Wa. So, I mean, aren't you?
This one?
15, number 4. That one? Yeah. So the father's sister and mother's sister terms being swapped between Sha and Wa. I mean, aren't you?
Yeah.
And I wondered if you had any explanation for that. That's my first question.
Right.
And the second question about this interesting Maro relation at the end and the explanation you give, which is plausible, but in Southern New Guinea, you get exactly the same kinship relationship lexicalized by a term nako, but you don't get men living with their wives normally, but what you do get is direct sister exchange, so that two men with that relation have each had to enter into a very close relationship with the family through exchanging their own sisters, even though they're not living together. So there can be multiple causality for the same kinship category. That's just a statement, but maybe back to the question about why you think those terms have swapped like that.
Well, this is a good realization, Professor Evans. I haven't looked very closely to this myself, but yeah, it does show swap ani and amchu in different Dzongkha speaking area. As I showed you in the Dzongkha dialect list, that some of the Dzongkha spoken in high up in the north and the Dzongkha version spoken down south are quite different. And sometimes the words that are used by northerners is hard to understand by southerners. And that was one of my point, that it is hard to consider Dzongkha as a dialect of Tibetan. Even among Dzongkha itself, it is hard now to consider all Dzongkha as dialects of Dzongkha, because they are moving quite into distinct. But this one, it totally moved back and forth. So it could be a mistake by my language consultant friends. I can recheck with them. But as far as I'm concerned, I did not only talk to one person, but several of them. And I did even call back and ask questions about these auntie and two kinds of aunties. But this does make a good point here. Yes, it swaps. And in Wa region, that is my native language speaking area, and that area I'm pretty sure. But the Sha region is where I got my friends, and I will get back to them on this and find out. Well, I haven't really done too much precise interview with them, but from talks over listening to friends and listening to old elders, they are kind of like a little bit of similar to Tibetans, like marrying brothers to one sister, one wife. So that kind of keeps all the wealth in the family. And I heard that is the practice with them. And some of the husbands can go take care of the yaks, and some of the husbands can stay at home and take care of the family, and some can go down to, as I mentioned in my earlier, and that they have to go and haul food from the lowlanders, so they would do the trading with the lowlanders. So therefore, they have the tradition of marrying to multiple husbands. But now I believe that since the arranged marriage in lowlanders is fading out, similarly, I think that tradition is also fading out in the north as well as in Tibet. Two minutes, stop.